Oh, what are you doing? I'll tell you what you're doing. You're listening to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. Either you are, or I'll be skipping rope with your entrails. Ta-ta.
This is the Elder Scrolls Lorecast, your source for lore and so much more. Adventurers, welcome back to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. This is your host, Tom, or Robots. I'm here with Lotus, my sidekick. I've never called you my sidekick.
Ooh,
are you my sidekick?
Dibs on a sidekick. We always like say co-host or something.
Yeah. Normally we're the co-hosts of the show.
Dibs on sidekick this week.
Kind of like Zurin Arctos to Tiber Septim.
Okay, yep. You're dibs on Zurin Arctos.
So I guess I'm Tiber Septim.
You're Tiber Septim.
This is weird. I'm a megalomaniac, soon to be god.
Can I be the Numidium?
You are the Numidium. Okay. So if you haven't figured it out already, we are continuing our look at Tiber Septim. This time we're talking about all the different places that Tiber Septim conquers and how he does it. This is the Tiber War, which is a very short Tiber War type. Tiber Septim War? It's the Tiber War.
The Tiber War.
Yeah.
It's fine. There's a lot of conquering. Minimal amounts of failure.
Yeah. So I figured I'd put you right on the spot and you're just going to describe all of it right now. Go.
Okay. So he actually uses a giant robot, takes over most of Tamriel, and then actually runs into one mild holdup and then turns out doesn't like swamps. Boom. Done.
There you go. Episode's over. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next time. Bye, everybody. There's a little more to it. Here's what we're going to do. We're referencing, of course, the UESP. These are our friends. This is the best wiki for Elder Scrolls stuff online. All of the wikis have benefits. They've all got their good parts.
Yeah. And they have different, they kind of like the Imperial Library is a great counterpart to the UESP because it's a little more of all encompassing exact wording from things, which is really useful when you're looking for exact documentation of like forums and exact quotes and stuff. Mm-hmm. Super useful with the Imperial Library.
Yeah.
When you're looking at different parts of the lore specifically, I would recommend the UESP. They really kind of coincide very, very well.
Yep. And lots of footnotes, lots of references to where they get the info from. So go check them out if you ever want to dig deeper. We are referencing on the Tiber Septim article. There's a whole section about the Tiber War, and it breaks down very briefly each of the different provinces and what happens in each of the provinces. And so I'm going to read through these. And then, as we usually do, we're going to comment. We'll expand on it with other information, whatever. Or we'll just go, yep, that's basically it.
Yeah,
next one.
Say, there are a few parts that are kind of just like, there's not a lot more to say.
Right.
This is pretty concise.
Right. But it's a great starting off point. And then I recommend that you go dig into some of this stuff in other details, play through parts of the games or look up other articles or whatever in order to figure out a little bit more of the details or listen to us expand on it. So here we go. Let's start this off. And first of all, before we get into this, thank you for being here, chat. It's so nice to see everybody popping into the live stream. We're so glad that you're here. All right, let's start this off. So if you want to come up to speed with where we are, go back and listen to the previous episode where we talk about where Tiber Septim came from, who he might possibly be, because there's multiple names. It's all very confusing, and I have a really crazy theory about all of it. But we're going to leave that behind now. We're at the point now where the assassination of Coolicane happens. Tiber Septim becomes the Emperor, basically. He's the one that takes the reins, takes control of this Imperial army. The Nords come to, you know, flock to him, all of that. And he basically sets off to conquest the rest of Tamriel. So this starts with Cyrodiil. And it says here, Cyrodiil, now that Tiber Septim possessed the Amulet of Kings, which he got from the whole death of Coolicane and being crowned the king or the emperor at this point. Basically, he gets the Amulet of Kings, which is the big long story about the rulers of the empire all have the amulet. It's mentioned in multiple games. We can dig into that another time, but he gets that, and he could don it as the true dragonborn ruler. This is just a reminder that all the rulers were dragonborn, or at least of that line. They're supposed to be dragonborns. And he held undisputed claim over the Ruby Throne. That's basically it for Cyrodiil. They were like, basically like, yep, you're the dude. We're with you.
It's you.
It's you. Any other thoughts on that
you.
One, Lotus?
Blood says it's you.
Yeah, and we knew that he was a dragonborn because he could do the shouts.
Yeah.
but
kind of without as much training as well. It kind of just that's a little, it's again referencing the games, because the games are a really good like grounding point on the stories to this. But you know, if you just naturally know how to use the voice, it's like that's supposed to take training with the graybeards and stuff like that. When you can just pick up and go, it's like you're a natural. Literally, you're naturally dragonborn.
Right.
Like,
this is in your blood. So
yeah, you're meant to have this. So
right. So to all of them, it was pretty clear that he was the one that they've been waiting for, and so they get behind him. So what about Skyrim, the home of the Nords? During the Battle of Sankar Tor, an alliance of Bretons and Nords intended to stand against General Talos and his army. We talked a little bit about this on the previous episode. Mm-hmm. The Nords, who were suspicious of Hyrux's aristocracy, words are tough, held the general's thume, or heard the general's thume, and recognized him as the son of Skyrim and heir to the empires of men. Thus, they joined his armies. After short-lived skirmishes, the Jarl of Skyrim quickly bowed to Talos and came into his empire.
This was the one we referenced where everybody basically was like, whoa, okay, we're just going to join up with this. This is not what we should be fighting against. And everybody just immediately joins his side.
Yeah, I would I'd love to picture this in your mind. You are a Nord of Skyrim. You have your traditions, your songs, your myths, and you know that the son of Skyrim is going to one day show up, the heir to the empire, the dragonborn, who is going to rule over all of Tamriel. But you don't know anything about this Talos guy. You don't know anything about the specifics of these armies from Cyrodiil, from the empire. You're in a fight. You show up at the front lines, and all of a sudden, at the head of their army is this dude who's using shouts to use the weather against you, to knock down walls.
To literally rip down walls. It's right. Like, okay.
And I can imagine
the guy we've heard about.
Yeah, I can imagine the situation. You're in a line with all these other soldiers, and you all look at each other, and you're like, that's our dude. We know what that is. And immediately you put down your weapons, or at least you stop holding them up for battle. You put them to your side, you sheath your swords, and you go, hold on, we're coming with you. And you turn around and you fight against the rest of the Hyrox armies and all of that.
Yeah.
So that's pretty crazy. So let's talk about Hyrox. So it says here, following the Battle of Sankar Tor, the Empire rounded up the soldiers from Hyrox. The Battle Mage command was summarily executed, and the Breton captives were imprisoned or sold into slavery. Wonderful, wonderful things.
Wholesome as hell.
Yes. With the help of a self-appointed provisional governor, Tiber Septim subsequently solidified the Witch Kings of Hyrox. This was the ruling group of Hyrox at the time. They were called Witch Kings. This isn't a Lord of the Rings reference, but it kind of is, but it's kind of not. They're not undead or anything.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a lot of those in the original formation of the series.
Right. But these like magical kings of Hyrox, these Bretons who used great magic powers to rule over people, all of that kind of thing, and consolidated their borders as much as possible. Merchant lords and mercenaries took advantage of the waning border laws that would come to be replaced by imperial law. Nevertheless, Hyrox became yet another province to come into the empire. Thoughts on that one, Lotus?
No, it's just kind of, you know, this one wasn't super bloody or drawn out. This was just kind of more of, in the way that, like, we had just discussed, like, okay, the Nords just kind of jumped on board because it went right along with the, like, oh, okay, that seems good. When a lot of your companions or leaders are just kind of, like, executed and or immediately imprisoned and sold into slavery, that's got to kind of be a downer for morale.
Right. So basically, like, he kills anybody who's against him and then just installs his own governor.
Right. So it's like it very quickly, with how swift that whole thing is, when, you know, you've got the Nords just basically flipping onto his side immediately, that has got to be a morale backbreaker, where it's like, okay, well, what the hell are we going to fight now? Like, why are we fighting against this now? Like, look at what's happening. So that doesn't seem like that's going to be a long drawn out, like, well, no, we'll resist. It really just kind of it kind of killed the Breton morale real quick, to the point where it just seemed like this was an imminent takeover, pretty much.
Yeah. I also like how the attempt to take on the Nords and the Bretons together was a military attempt. And of course, the Nords, very military, and they decide, you know, we're not going to fight. We're just going to join you. So that was kind of like a military decision.
Yes.
In this case, High Rock is full of aristocracy, political intrigue, and this is kind of a political thing. He didn't march armies into High Rock. He basically just assassinated the right people and installed his own government.
Right. Got rid of the leadership. It's one of those things where it's like when you have like what is it? Like that thing about like if you cut off the head, like the rest will like wither or whatever the saying, ruined whatever that saying was, but you get the idea. It's just like if you have the thing directing everybody, they just kind of scatter off. So it's like, well, okay, if we get rid of those in charge, they have no direct leadership to hold against us. We already flipped one of their allies, so they're on our side.
Yeah.
Logically,
yeah,
maybe it's best to just join us now too and just boom, supplanted into his thing, and his army his army and rule grows as a result.
So there's also something in common with all of these locations. Cyrodiil, High Rock, and Skyrim all contain descendants from At-Mora. They're the Needs, the descendants of the Needs, who either become the Nords or blend into the communities and High Rock, becoming the Bretons by mixing with elves, or becoming the Imperials by mixing with the descendants of man in that section of the world. So these are all three mannish provinces, I guess you could say. The other one is Hammerfell, but Hammerfell, most of the people in Hammerfell aren't Needs.
No.
No.
They're already invaders.
Right. They're Redguard, who originally weren't from At-Mora. They were from a different continent, right? So here's what happens with Hammerfell. Hammerfell, the best understood episode of the Tiber Wars was the conquest of the Redguard Kingdom of Hammerfell. So this is the first time they're going against people with a very distinctive, different background than most of the mannish people in the continent.
Sure.
Despite observing the might of the quickly expanding empire, the already aged and ailing High King of Hammerfell, Thassad II, resisted all forms of imperial invasion. It was only after his death in the Second Era, 862, that Hammerfell began to weaken, not from an external invasion, but rather from an internal revolution. It was a civil war between the two most prominent factions, the rebellious Forebears and the loyalist Crowns, the latter of which supported Thassad's heir, Ator. After initial defeats, the Forebears signed a pact with the Emperor, granting him minor territory concessions in exchange for aiding them in the Civil War. The already weakened Crown still provided heavy resistance to invading Imperial forces until at last they were cornered at Strass Mackay in the Second Era, 864. The Battle of Strass Mackay was won thanks to Admiral Rickton's shrewd tactics and the aid of Septim's dragon vassal, Nephalilargus.
Yes, classic Nephalilargus.
Nephalilargus.
Yes.
The Empire swiftly took control of Hammerfall, imposing several provincial governors to rule different regions. So let's just stop there because there's more.
There's a lot to unpack with all of that.
Yeah, there's a civil war, the non-crown side.
Mentioned, go ahead. Well, so one thing that I think is kind of just neat to look at, where we just talked about, where one of them was like a military choice, followed by like almost like a political method. Mm-hmm. This was almost both.
Yeah, because it was a civil war.
There was fighting, but at the same time, by supplementing those seeds of dissent after like the Crowns and the Forebears started to differ on like, well, okay, maybe we should join him, maybe we shouldn't, kind of sowing that seed of dissent there. Well, okay, now they're falling apart from within. It weakens the structure because now it's not a united front against Septim,
right?
And this is where he kind of gets a foothold and gets going. This also with the Battle of Strass Mackay and Nafilar, which is Elsewhere dragon for everybody who plays ESO. It's
yeah, he shows up again. If you want to know more about Nephalilargus, go listen to the episode we did with all of the dragons. We went through all of the named dragons. So if you want to know more about dragons, go check that out.
Yes. And the Battle of Strass Mackay and Nafilar and stuff like this. This is actually explained at your opening cinematic of the Elder Scrolls Adventures Redguard. This is actually right around this time. This is kind of like what we're getting into. So if you're super interested in this and you have a very high tolerance for
for terrible voiced characters,
old games with very interesting audio and
mechanics,
if you want to call them mechanics, yes,
attempts at mechanics,
the Elder Scrolls Adventures Redguard, because that's where a lot of this is got this section is going to come from.
Yeah, so basically the rebels are against the loyalists, so that's the forebears and the crowns.
Yep.
The rebels pull in the empire to help with their side, but of course the empire marches in and starts taking land because yep. this is an opportunity to do so. It goes on, it says, later that same year, an uprising led by siblings Cirrus and Izara saw the Restless League come out of hiding. They stormed the palace, and Cirrus himself cornered provincial governor Emil Richten and imperial emissary Dram aboard a Dwemiri dirigible. Yes, a Dwemiri dirigible.
Perfect.
Cirrus killed them both with the soul sword, which was enchanted with the soul of Prince Ator. This act was allegedly the third incarnation of the Hunding. Thereafter, Tiber Septim came to Strauss Mackay personally to sign a treaty that held more favorable terms for the Red Guards. Izara presented Hammerfell and was guided by the wisdom of Prince Ator via the soul sword. This goes into all of the crazy Red Guard soul yeah. sword magic that whole thing, the Hunding.
Yes, the sword singing and
sword
all
singing,
that. This
yeah.
is literally that little excerpt. I guess spoilers. We should have put that before. Spoilers for the Elder Scrolls Adventures Redguard. That was basically a synopsis of how the end of the Elder Scrolls Redguard plays out.
Which is really cool to think about, because if the next main Elder Scrolls game comes out in a few years and is featured on locations like Hammerfell and High Rock, mm-hmm. then I would imagine, like, this is some of the rumors, that we're going to get more sword singing. We're going to get a continuation of this side of the story of what goes on here, specifically in Hammerfell with the Red Guard, which could be really, really cool, because this is stuff that we haven't seen in a modern game.
Right.
And the closest thing we have is the Red Guard game, which most people haven't played.
Yeah, I don't recommend it.
So any other thoughts on that one, Lotus?
No, it's one of the things that I have always said, because I find all of the games have redeeming qualities, and I find the story really started to form in some cool ways with the Elder Scrolls Adventures Redguard. And it gave some good background, because I think the Redguards are so unique and like cool as like a race in the series. So
it's such a different culture than everything else that exists.
Yeah.
And it has this really mysterious history with the sinking of a continent.
Right, the sinking continent.
Yeah.
The idea of sword singing and stuff like that. But yeah, so, I a lot of this is the plot of the Elder Scrolls Redguard itself, and kind of what happens during and after that whole thing. And I guess right before, because they refer to the battle of it and stuff like that. But it's just, you know, this is a little bit of both here. There's some political stuff and also some straight up fighting to get what he needs here. So
right.
This one wasn't a peaceful takeover, or even remotely peaceful.
Right. So let's move on to another place. What about elsewhere? I'm sure this one's going to be a little weird, you know, cat people and all that. I'm sure the Empire yeah. treats them fairly all the time.
Of course.
Of course they do. It says, Tiber Septim and his armies did a great number on the catfolk of elsewhere. Years before incorporating them into the Empire, General Potreid, P-O-T-T-R-E-I-D.
I think so.
Potreid, accompanied by the young war prodigy Atribus, led an attack on Senshal. The siege was so devastating to the Khajiit people, it was stricken from official imperial records. Ultimately, elsewhere became yet another province to fall under the ever-growing empire. Much like during the time period of Riemann, the Khajiit were rebellious against the empire. So they murdered Khajiit on a level that they'd never done before or expected. And it was so bloody that even though they were the victors, they struck it from imperial record.
Yeah, that one's kind of like, okay, so we are going to do this in the most brutal and efficient fashion possible, I assume. And then it's like, we need to edit the accounts of this so that we don't look like absolute monsters.
Right. This wasn't just fair fights. This wasn't us just using a machine to knock down walls and be able to siege, you know, fortresses and things like that. Because
yeah.
that's what you do in battle. You find a way to siege a fortress, right? This was absolute decimation, like bloodshed everywhere. And on top of that, they technically ruled over the Providence, but most of the Khajiit were just rebellious against them during that time anyway. It wasn't, it makes me think of like the Empire in Star Wars, where they're like, right, yeah, we rule this planet, but everyone on the planet's like, yeah, good luck. And there's just everybody's working as rebellion like agents underneath, yeah, that anyway.
This reeks of war crimes yeah. And like, oh, all those innocent civilians are currently taking shelter. All right, well, we'll just blow that up, like siege that real quick, and that'll break their morale. And it's like, woof, that is, it's hard to phrase yourself like the good guy and the heroic conqueror when it's like, yep, kill those that are surrendering. It's like, mm-hmm. that's not going to garner a lot of sympathy from anybody outside the people who are currently enjoying conquering.
Right.
So like, yeah, this mm-hmm. this one definitely is, it's kind of funny. It brought up in chat, like, yeah, like real history. It's like, yeah, a little, I think Tiber Septim had a little tasteful editing in this one where it's like, yeah, we can't be letting all of this out. We won, but let's gussy it up so that it looks like we won a fight rather than a massacre.
Right. And so elsewhere went pretty easy, but then there was Black Marsh. Black Marsh, before it became a province of the Empire, a skirmish in Black Marsh over a captive named Riki saw an important member of Tiber's legion nearly lose a leg to an Argonian feather serpent. Ultimately, Black Marsh was never successfully invaded in full, like the majority of the other provinces. This was largely because the savage, dangerous inner swamps of the province dissuaded Tiber. It was deemed best to avoid invading central Black Marsh, as the land was strategically unimportant. The outer borders, however, quickly fell to Tiber Septim's armies. So this land, I mean, it's the bottom corner of the continent. It's all marshland. It doesn't have any resources that they want.
Area.
Right. And there's no resources that they want. There's no, they don't need to go through it to get to another province. It just goes to the ocean. So they were like, we're just going to take the nice parts along the edges, but the deep, deep swamp down there full of Argonian feather serpents that bite people's legs off or whatever else is down there. The hist. The Argonians, right, yeah, the masses of Argonians
that nobody can really get a good grip on.
Right. So they leave that stuff.
Yeah, it really strikes me. It's kind of funny because Weathers just worded that kind of like a joke, and it was about where Tiber's like, okay, actually, forget it. You know what? Just forget it. Strikes me as like, it's really what I was about to say, where knowing the way Tiber is just literally sweeping across the continent, just like once he gets some momentum too, it just builds on itself. Like once a rock starts going downhill, it's building that momentum. It's getting harder and harder to stop. And then all of a sudden it's like you have a whole bunch of glue traps when you reach Black Marsh, because I get the feeling just by the way this is worded, just plowing in, assuming that it's going to just be as easy as possible. And on the border areas where it's kind of, you know, still land and not
just
liquid
swamp.
Dirt.
Not just like the southern tip of Florida. That's just miles and miles of swamp that I drove through recently.
Yeah.
It's just swamp, guys. There's nothing down there.
So like, that's just it. It's like, okay, he's takes stuff over and then all of a sudden it just grinds to a like, oh dear God, like how are we going to do this? And then it just is like, yeah, you know what? Actually, we're just going to move on. Like, I don't think there's anything of value here.
Right.
We're just going to pretend this didn't happen. Look,
right.
We captured some of Black Marsh, pointing out the fact that, you know, all these things along the edges and stuff like that. That's totally fine. They've got some stuff. But then it's like, all right, moving on up. Let's just move past this. We're going to just pretend this. And it's like, it's almost strikes me as phrased in a way that it's like, Yeah, no, this isn't important. We don't need to bother with this. Not, I literally don't know what we're supposed to do.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, what do we do here? How do we do this?
The amount of people that would have died just to take that land and then not be able to hold it for no resources, like doesn't make any sense.
You're not going to be able to build like outposts on it. They're just going to sink. Like,
The only people who actually can live here are the Argonians because they're biologically designed to live in places like this.
Yes.
The rest, the elves and men and other people around, like the Khajiit, like not designed to live there. Like this is a very harsh land to live in and no resources. So why spend the manpower and money to do it?
Another weird scenario of the relatively passive Argonians just like being obnoxious to deal with when it doesn't like sit, like, you know, a lot of times they're oppressed and stuff like that. And mm-hmm. then every now and then you get these scenarios where they get pushed in a direction and it's just like, whoop, nope, that didn't work. Everybody abandoned ship. It's just like they did it to the Daedra during Oblivion. That's like, and Tiber Septim.
Yep.
They're really one of the most notable areas where it's just like, we got nothing here on their home turf. Like, we can't do this. So.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. We've got one more province before we take a quick break in the middle. Let's talk about Morrowind.
Yeah.
Morrowind. This one's interesting. It was the only province to never be incorporated into the two prior empires of Cyrodiil. Therefore, little was known of the province by official imperial records. And I think you could probably say the land of Morrowind and the land of Black Marsh are probably some of the two weirdest land areas. Black Marsh being a big swamp and mysterious because of that. Morrowind being a big volcano and the land around it that is also
the weird mushrooms that everybody knows.
Very strange. Yeah, yeah. Tiber Septim, possibly under the guidance of Ysmir Wolfhearth. We talked about that before. Ysmir might be Arctis, Zirin Arctis. Was advised to incorporate the province of Morrowind into the Empire, but was very hesitant as he was aware of the divine power of the Tribunal. The living trio.
Having literal gods on your side is definitely going to be a little imposing. Even to somebody that's just wrecking house across the continent.
Right. And at this point, they may have known that they've confronted Daedra directly, that they've fought with Daedra directly, that they've held their ground against Daedric princes. Like, that is no small task. However, he coveted the rich resources of ebony located in the province as he needed a source of capital to rebuild Cyrodiil, which had been ravaged by 400 years of war during the Interregnum. That's the time period that ESO is in. So ESO goes on for like
during
400 years of that stuff, right? Everyone's just battling each other. Everything keeps getting worse and worse and worse over time. Ultimately, the need for the ebony and the dream of a fully united Tamriel won out, and Tiber set his sights on the land of the Dark Elves. The rulers of the Dunmer and the Empire could not reach initial agreements, and Tiber's armies laid waste to the capital of Morrowind, Mournhold. In the wreckage of the great city, Tiber and his Dark Elf general, Symmachus, came across the young Baron Zaya. These names might be familiar to you because they show up in other places. Who they agreed might prove valuable someday and took her into imperial care. Amidst all the skirmishes between the Empire and the Dunmer, mutual reservations were growing for both parties. Unbeknownst to the populace, the Tribunal's power was waning with the return of the Sharmat Dagoth-Ur. These are the events of Morrowind, right?
Yes.
Like, this is some of this early stuff that leads to the events of Morrowind.
Yeah, it leads to the game Morrowind. It's all in Morrowind, obviously, but this is the precursor stuff that leads up to the Elder Scrolls III Morrowind.
Right, Dagoth-Ur coming to power and all of that. Who had cut them off from their source of divine power. Because of this, Vivek saw fit to reach an agreement with Tiber. On the Empire side, Tiber Septim felt similarly compelled to reach a truce instead of dealing with the might of three living gods and the lingering threat of the returning Dagoth-Ur. So basically, he's like, okay, there's three gods here, and then there's a fourth one that's potentially coming to power here. And maybe we'll just work out something.
Yeah, let's let this god fight play out, and we'll just kind of sit by and... just play nice.
Right. Thus, Vivek and Tiber Septim signed the Armistice, a treaty that gave Morrowind near full autonomy, a right no other province possessed, in exchange for provincial status in the Empire. So basically, they became a province. They are an extension of the Empire. The Empire has ultimate general say over things, but for the most part, the day-to-day stuff is still run by the Tribunal. So they maintain their autonomy in this like sort of connected way. They have to pay tribute and those kinds of things, probably, right?
Right. And it's still got the powers of the great houses kind of doing their thing. Like you just mentioned, the Tribunal obviously is ruling over stuff. But then it's a way that Tiber Septim doesn't literally need to be like, yeah, I'm not touching that mess either.
Right.
And be like, oh, no, look, we're good. We got look. I continued to conquer. See, they're part of it. They didn't step away.
They're paying us
they're
money.
Paying their dues. It's
we
fine.
We get some of the resources we wanted from them. Everything's gonna be fine.
Yeah, it's like no sanctioned assassinations. Yeah, that's legal there.
Yeah, but, as long as they keep that over there, that's fine.
I allow it there. They, you know, it's like How much say do you really have here, Tiber? It feels like this was another whiff that you're trying to spin into a...
Right.
No, no.
Except for one point.
Nice.
This is a whiff, but I could see why he would say okay to all this, because additionally, Vivek gifted Tiber Septim the all-powerful brass golem, the Numidium, per terms of the treaty. Tiber also personally approached the leaders of the Morag Tong and reached an agreement that no non-Dunmer citizens could use their services. The Morag Tong are their official government-appointed assassins.
Right.
And
which,
go ahead.
Since that's part of their culture, as weird as that is, like sanctioned assassinations amongst themselves, it was one of those deals where it just kind of seemed like, I'm really not interested in ruffling the feathers here because this could be really problematic trying to forcibly take over Morrowind. So it was very much like a lot of let's play nice publicly and nothing's really mattering too much. And in return, like you mentioned, he gets the Numidium.
Yeah.
And they're kind of like, yeah, here you go. And
right. Which makes sense because after failing to take over places like Blackmarsh, having a big tool like the Numidium might come in handy.
Yeah, definitely. Whether it was expected that he would fire this baby up and actually be able to use it efficiently or not, not entirely sure everybody expected him to be able to just be like, okay, cool, I have a death robot. And everybody's like, ooh.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, I've got a battle mage and he's got a plan for how to power this thing.
Yeah. It's like, so this actually isn't a paperweight. I can actually use this thing.
A very large paperweight. But anyway, he makes an agreement. Basically, the Morag Tong can only do stuff in their land with Dunmer. They reach an agreement. No non-Dunmer citizen could use their services or have a mark placed on them. So they both can't make calls for assassination on other people, and they themselves cannot be a mark of assassination by the Morag Tong.
Right. Dark Brotherhood alone.
Dark Brotherhood still exists out there somewhere, but that's not part of this.
Likely unsanctioned Dark Brotherhood.
Right. Likely, so he did not have to worry about facing the same threat that eliminated the majority of the Second Empire. So he learned from the past and was like, okay, how about I just don't get assassinated by Morag Tong? That would be nice.
I would like to sleep with both my eyes closed if I could.
Right. And not a dagger in my back, because that's not a very comfortable way to sleep. So that's Morrowind. Basically, the Tribunal maintain their roles, even though their power was in decline, which allows them to try to deal with Daggeroth or later during the events of the Morrowind game, where the Nerevarian shows up. That's who you are, spoilers. And you help them deal with that, and you make decisions along the way, or you break the game by killing Vivek like Lotus did.
Yes. Well, he was asking for it.
Yeah, he might have been. All right. We're up to Morrowind here. We've got Valenwood and Somerset to talk about next. And if you're wondering why the Numidian might have been needed, then if you think about all these elven empires that have yet to be conquested, That might give you some reasons for why he might have wanted that so badly. All right, let's go thank our patrons. We'll be right back.
It's that time. Holiday shopping is here, and I've got something to help you out. Uncommon Goods takes the stress out of gifting with thousands of unique, high-quality finds you won't see anywhere else. And that's legit. How many different stores can you find exactly the same products and you just are shopping for whoever has the best deal? No. This is a place that has high quality, unique, often handmade or made in the US products by independent artists and small businesses that truly create one of a kind gifts for all sorts of different seasons. And it's the holiday season. Well, get this. I found one that I thought was super cool. Now, my wife loves puzzles. She loves mysteries. She loves escape rooms. They have murder mystery jigsaw puzzles where you use the puzzle to solve the mystery. There's a few of these, and I think I might pick up the clairvoyant convention one. I think she'll love it. And that's just one example. They've got gifts for moms and teens, book lovers, history buffs, diehard football fans, foodies, mixologists, gardeners. There's something here for everybody on your gift list. And they give back $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice with every purchase. They've donated more than $3.1 million to date. So don't wait. Cross those names off your list before the rush. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/scrollslore. That's uncommongoods.com/scrollslore for 15% off. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary.
This is Hamish Morak, Dragonborn. You are educating yourself to the Elder Scrolls lore cast.
All right, here we are in the middle of the show. We have three new patrons. Welcome aboard to Kenneth R., Jack B., and RTG640. Welcome to the Patreon. Oh, I'm so glad that you are here. If you have signed up and you're getting your ad-free episodes and other stuff, thank you so much for that. And if you've been a part of this for a long time now, if you are one of the 112 current active patrons, thank you so much for that as well. If you've signed up in the past, thank you for that as well. Also, just a reminder, we have our patron chat coming up next week, but I have a thing going on Thursday night. I've got, like, my son's going on a field trip, but he's on a plane because they're going out of state, and then he has to fly back and I have to go pick him up. I know that's probably more information than most people needed, but all that's to say that we will probably have to do our patron chat on Tuesday night, if that's okay with our patrons. Also, make sure if you are signed up as the Dragonborn level or higher, that you have connected your account to the Discord. All you have to do is search how to connect Patreon to Discord. There's a how-to page that pops up. Make sure you do that, because it's on the Discord that we talk about the topic that we're going to be talking about that week, right? And we plan things, and I share the link to the Zoom chat and all of that. So,
and if you're worried about the time, we were discussing, worst case scenario, you might need to just deal with only me running amok. So we'll figure out what works mostly for the Patreon. Yeah. We'll kind of try to make that work for everybody.
We'll fill everyone in on the Discord, so be aware. So it's either still going to happen on Thursday, and maybe Lotus will just take it on, and then maybe I can still make part of the episode. Yep. Or we'll push it to Tuesday night, but we'll show you. We'll tell
whatever
you for sure.
Whatever works for most people.
Right. So we'll figure that out. Don't worry about it. Also, if you're interested in joining us, there's still time to sign up. Head over to patreon.com/Elder Scrolls Lorecast. Or if you just want ad-free episodes, or you want to get like those first 90 episodes where it was just me before Lotus shows up, there's lots of stuff on there. Go check it out. Thank you to everybody who supports us on that. We couldn't do this show without you. Also, if you'd like to leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, we'll read it out on a future episode of the show. Sometimes, though, we get other reviews. We got this one that came in recently. It's a 1-star review, so I thought it would be fun to read it. It is from, I'm not going to mention the person's name. If you want to go look this up, you can. But the title says Stimulus, and there's 1-stars, and it says, please, without an E, stop talking about arthropods. I'm not sure what an arthropod is. I know what an arthropod is. But arthropods, episode 277 was bloody disgusting. I think we
guessing
did our job.
Don't like spider data.
I guess they don't like spiders. I think that's what they're trying to say here. And
spider
data. That's awesome. I think like spider danger are creepy. I think we did our job. I'm sorry if this is a phobia thing. Yeah. Like, please,
it wasn't meant to trigger your
this
phobia.
Isn't meant to trigger phobias. I'm so sorry if this is like a phobia thing, if this is like a genuine, like, I don't know with reviews like this if this is like, oh, it would be funny if I posted a review with 1-star, sure, because, oh my god, that was a disgusting episode, or
which, granted, it is. They're weird, and they're exceptionally weird in Battlespire.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a super gross thing. But if this is actually like a legitimate like thing, I apologize. I don't mean to make light of it.
I didn't mean to gross you out, though.
I just don't know, and it's the internet, so I'm going to side on this is a funny comment. So,
ooh, yeah, we got to chuckle out of it that it was apparently a bad episode because we did too well for it.
I guess so. Yeah, so we'll just go with that. But if this is legitimately a problem, I apologize.
But hopefully that didn't actually give you like phobia thing.
Although it's in the title of the episode. There's a warning. It says spider danger in the title. Like,
that is
maybe don't click, if you have a phobia, maybe don't click on episodes that have your phobia in them. I don't know.
That is true.
Anyway. Thanks, I guess. If this is a joke, we'd appreciate if you change that to 5-stars, because that really does help with the ranking. But if you have other ways that you want to help us out, if you're looking for other ways, then ranking us on Spotify or whatever podcatcher you're listening to this on, or sharing with your friends, or checking out the YouTube channel. There's all sorts of fun things you can do. All right. Well, let's move on with the rest of the show. Here we go.
You're listening to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast, dear child of Sithis. That is why the Night Mother loves you.
All right, here we are. We're back. We've got two more provinces to talk about, Lotus. You ready to talk about Valenwood?
Yeah.
All right, so Valenwood, the elven provinces of Valenwood and Somerset Isle, had formed an alliance, the Second Eldmeri Dominion, which we know about from ESO. The government of Valenwood under this alliance was known as the Thalmor. So the Thalmor were a part of not just the Somerset Isles, but also Valinwood at this point, which consists of Bosmeri chieftains and Altmeri diplomats. This governing body was annihilated by Tiber Septim and his armies. However, Tiber allowed them to retain certain traditions, such as a tribal council. A Camerun king was permitted the throne of Valinwood, though he was reduced to ruling as a figurehead. So basically, he installs a figurehead over this area, but destroys at least the extent of Thalmor that he knew were active in Valinwood.
Right. And I don't want to... All right, so propaganda aside, I don't want to say I told you so, Altmeri Dominion, but I told you so. You don't make it very long after ESO, so you might as well just pick a different alliance.
We're going to get letters about that one.
Oh, I 100% will.
Oh, a lot of them will say, no, I like the Altmeri Dominion, but I don't like the Thalmor. Like, they're different. They're not the same.
It's look, I'm sorry. You're all done. And that just happened.
Also, if the Thalmor were truly wiped out at this point, then we wouldn't have to deal with them in Skyrim.
And, no, there's always, yep. And all of that. Got some struggling into like hiding for quite some time before we saw a resurgence of the Dominion.
Right. Or maybe the reports of how actually thoroughly they wiped them out were a little bit inflated.
Ooh, I don't like that one as much.
I mean, it is the Empire. There's bureaucracy.
Are like, you implying that there might be a bit of propaganda from their side of things?
All the time. Yes, absolutely. All over the place.
I'm not even implying it. I'm just straight up saying
Can you imagine if you're one of like Tiber's generals and he's like, yeah, march down Valinwood, take them all out. You march them down there and you're like, oh, these forests are a nightmare. They're sniping us out of the trees. Let's just go back and just claim that we did it. We're good.
Right.
We'll just say, yeah, mission accomplished. We killed all the Thalmor we could find. They're done. Because who else is going to march down there and deal with it?
Right. That? The only thing is, all I picture is just like, when you've got the Numidium, I just picture this thing like Transformer style, just becoming like a logging machine and just like buzzing through Valinwood tree.
Just like blowing stuff through, just tearing
not even
trees
like
out of the
winning
roots.
The fight, just making a mess,
just creating like one big path.
Yeah, just one blender forest path right through the middle.
Yeah. All right, so that's Valinwood, but then we end up with the Somerset Isles, and you would imagine of anybody who's going to have a problem with the man-run Cyrodiilian Empire, it's going to
be your Altmer.
It's going to be Altmer. The Altmer of Somerset were incorporated into the Second Empire of Riemann Cyrodiil under extremely loose circumstances, which sounds a lot like Morrowind at this point.
Yeah.
They were very resistant to the taint of humanity. Taint in this context...
Not anatomy based.
Right. It means like corruption. It doesn't mean a certain part of your body.
Yeah. Human corruption.
Although
not human
I'm sure
anatomy.
They were probably also resistant to that as well.
Probably both.
Probably both. On the sacred isle of Alinor, and merely accommodated Riemann per their own account. They expressed that Tiber Septim would receive no such luxury. Tiber Septim knew that acquiring the province in totality would be next to impossible. And early on in his conquest, he sent Zeron Arctos to make peace with the king of Alinor. Another telling reminder of their might came at Black Rocks, where the Altmeri Dominion destroyed, or nearly destroyed, the entire Third Legion with a strategic trap. So they were putting up a strong defense here. On a ground-to-ground level, Tiber's legions felt very unthreatened by the Altmeri Dominion's forces and tauntingly referred to them as Old Mary Dominion, Mary being like the name Mary, for their supposedly womanly offense. This sounds like something that was written a few decades ago.
Yeah.
However, at
this
sea...
This is great.
Yeah, right? However, at sea, they were simply outmatched and the Dominion allegedly allied with the Maomiri, Reachmen, and even Khajiiti forces to oppose the expanding empire. So basically pulls in the Maomer, right? This like sea elves.
Yeah, we got
the
sea elves involved.
Aren't even on the continent usually. The Reachmen, who have not sided with anybody but themselves forever. And then, of course, the Khajiiti, who are just constant rebels because they aren't going to agree that their land was conquered.
Yeah, I was going to say, they're not a big fan of how they were conquered either.
Yeah. This all changed after Tiber acquired the Numidium from Vivek per terms of the armistice. Septim had it rebuilt in either the Halls of Colossus or in Cyrodiil. We're not really sure which. Again, propaganda? Who knows?
Yeah.
at the headquarters of the Imperial Battle Mages. Then he had his Battle Mage, Zurin Arctos, look into the Numidium's potential and purpose. After learning of the Numidium's true power, Tiber realized it was the key to his completing the conquest of Tamriel. The only issue he faced was the lack of a power source, as its original power supply, the heart of Lorcan, was being carefully guarded by Dagoth Ur. What follows is a point of much dispute. Some sources claim that an artifact known as the Mantella sprouted from the heart of either Zurin Arctos or Ysmir Wolfarth, or maybe they're both the same person. While not as adequate as the heart of Lorcan, it was able to power the brass golem. Additionally, another artifact known as the Totem of Tiber Septim was crafted by Zurin Arctos to allow one to control the Numidium. This is agreed upon. What is agreed upon is that both Ysmir and Zurin were vanquished by this point, and Tiber moved on to the Somerset Isles. This is all very confusing because Ysmir might be Tiber Septim also.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of like miscommunication information going on there. What's actually going on with the heart? Does Dagoth Ur have it? What, like,
we got magic robots involved at this point.
All of this stuff gets really fuzzy, right? After activating the Numidium near Rimmon, well, I guess what really matters here is that whatever they did actually worked to power it.
Yeah, the details are murky. The powering of the Numidium, not murky.
The thing actually worked. And
yeah, the thing actually worked. However it worked, it worked.
Yeah, so they activate it near Rimmon. Tiber Septim wrought trauma on the Khajiit populace before marching towards Aladar. Destroys more of Khajiit.
Enough,
right.
Just like, yeah, you guys are complaining an awful lot after the last slaughter. Power up the robot. It's like, all right, maybe... Maybe lay off the kitties for a little while.
Yeah, maybe. Numidium besieged the capital of the Somerset Isles, its fall occurring within an hour. Just 1 hour. Many great Altmer were slain, such as the legendary battle mage, Ereldur. Alenor's fall marked the end of the Tiber War, finally unifying Tamriel. I guess you could say this is unified.
I was going to say, what a way to unify. All right, so most of the continent is dead. Mm-hmm. I think we're unified from anybody that's left alive. They're either enslaved or they're just on our side now. It's like, all right, that's some unification, I guess.
Yeah, so I guess this did what he wanted to do to assert his dominance over the continent. Right. And so therefore it was done, because he either took or put down or avoided any of the land that he wanted, and then just claimed to be emperor of the entire continent.
Yeah.
So there you go. That's how the story ends, right, Lotus? That's it. There's nothing more.
Yeah, that's it. That's actually, that brings us right up to modern day. Everything is fine. He just keeps a giant brass golem just chilling, giving you the side eye in case you decide to get rebellious, and then it's laser beams for you. Yeah.
He sits on its shoulders and rides it around in parades and just waves at everybody. He's like, remember me?
And everyone lived happily ever after. There were no more wars.
Yeah, and they're like, we love you, Emperor. Thank you for the bread and wine. And he's like, oh, no problem. Infinite amount of bread and wine for my followers.
Yep, that's it.
Yeah, that's it. Oh, wait. No, it says there's more here. Oh, well.
Oh, it doesn't end just happily ever after? Oh.
No, in fact, there's a lot more stuff. Oh, and I guess he becomes a god at some point. There's that part, too.
I guess that's probably important that he technically is classified as the newest god.
So there's more to discuss here. All jokes aside, there's the aftermath of the war, this golden age that comes from it, and then his ascent to godhood, and even questions about, like, who is this the one that he seems to be worshiping? There's a lot of vagaries around this stuff, but what that means is, don't worry, we'll cover that stuff on a future episode, or at least as much of it as we can figure out.
Right. A lot of that's going to be a little more vague, and as if, like, you didn't grasp that from the previous episode, where it's like, there's documents about these fights oftentimes, or about these conquests, but trying to separate, I mean, from in lore, fact from fiction, I mean, it's all fiction, but like trying to separate fact from fiction within the world gets a little difficult at times, because we're hearing most of the stuff from the victor, essentially.
Mm-hmm. But even among the victors, there's multiple parties with their own agendas.
And that's the other thing is like, because this seemed like such an aggressive and abusive conquest of so many different groups, even some, like, to that point, like, even some of the people who did join Tiber Septim, I'm sure had levels of how okay they were with some of the stuff that was going on. So it's like, maybe they're trying to keep some kernels of truth available amongst what they're trying to portray is the situation, or some stuff is lost because, like, again, everything is very fallible in this series, since it's all written from in universe. There is no just overseeing eye that's describing, well, this is what actually happened.
Right.
It's all accounts from within. And when you have one of these really bloody conquests, it's hard to get exact facts sometimes, and this series does a great job of trying to keep that question up, and you just do your best to determine what you think is the closest to what actually probably happened.
There's a lot more to it. So I guess we'll just keep digging in. And if you have any thoughts that you want to share on this stuff, feel free to jump into the Discord.
Yeah. Let us know your ideas, because a lot of this is up for, you know, interpretation, debate, like, and it's just going to get weirder. And I assume the next one will probably be the last we do, because
I think so.
That'll get into the metaphysical, that, like, there are not a lot of situations where somebody literally becomes a god in the series. They're either a god of some type or not. And his is kind of contentious.
Yeah. You know what? Maybe we'll do two episodes, because there's also, like, items that are associated with Tiber Septim.
Oh, yeah.
Those are fun to cover, too, like we did with the Daedric Princes episodes.
Yeah.
So there's a bunch of, there's so much stuff here. So thank you for tuning in and going on this little adventure, conquesting the continent with us. And we'll be back next time with our patrons. And then after that, we'll continue more about Tiber Septim. So maybe another episode or two. But then I did get a request on the Discord. Somebody mentioned, hey, I really liked you going over the companions in ESO. You haven't, just kind of a reminder, you haven't gone over any of the other companions that have been added to the game
more since then.
Yeah, so we might go back and talk about companions in ESO. There's also, we love your insight into things that you want us to cover. That definitely helps as well, so feel free to chime in with some of those as well. But let's wrap it up. You got anything else going on?
Well, we should do our customary random UESP page.
That's true. I have it prepped.
I had
here.
A note here, seen reminded me as well in chat, but I did have a note to not. Yep. That's been quite the hit. So yep.
I pre-opened it. It's a small one. this one. Okay, so this is it. Online taking turns. Taking turns is awarded. This is basically an achievement. This is an ESO achievement. Stonethorn achievements points 10.
Oh, okay, so it's a dungeon. Okay, so it's from a. Oh, I have this. Okay,
you have like all the achievements, but yeah.
So. I have 98.9%.
Yeah, most of them. Taking turns is awarded by defeating Lady Thorn after each player has successfully activated the Blood Scavenger synergy at least once during each of the two Bat Swarm phases in Veteran Castle Thorn.
Perfect.
There
I
you
love
go.
It. That's, I remember that.
This is an entire page devoted to that one sentence description.
I was going to say that is one of the things that's great about the UESP. There's if you're looking for something, you're probably going to be able to find it there. It's
they've got everything. It's like it's all there. All right, Lotus, what else do you have going on?
So other than that, we managed to get together last weekend and record our big recap episode, as well as covering the update 41 that launched on PC for Elder Scrolls Online over at UESP's Tales of Tamriel. And it was a fun chat. We discussed the news that happened, the news that's upcoming. I actually realized one of the things, just discussing the fact that there's news, is the new Dungeons and Patch actually hits on Tuesday for console.
Nice.
So I guess something of note, at some point Tuesday, I do not know the time yet because I'm still getting used to my new schedule, we'll be doing the Dungeons Completely Clueless on stream. It's a tradition I always try to do. People get a kick out of us going in on hard mode and seeing how far we can get, not
just
knowing
blind
anything
hard
about
mode
them.
Dungeons. That's
yes.
great. That's
great. At while trying to talk to chat and figure out what we're doing. But that'll be over
all
on
in first
channel,
person.
Which, Oh dear God,
that's ultra hard difficulty.
That was such a disaster, that charity event. But yeah, so we're going to be doing that on Tuesday, which I guess would be the 26th. I feel like that's the 26th.
That sounds about right here.
Yeah, that sounds about right. We'll go with the 26th.
That's right. Yep.
So if you're interested in checking out me and my buddies trying to bumble our way through those hard modes or as far as we can get in a couple hours, if you go to twitch.com Lotus of Doom, that'll be we'll be streaming that. I'll give a time on probably Discord or Twitter or something like that coming up.
Yeah, go follow the account, and then if you're on Twitch, you might notice the
you're at PAX East this weekend. Say hi. I will be there.
Nice.
At least Saturday.
Nice. Well, have fun. I need to get back up there sometime. And it's been a few years since.
Yeah. There's nothing really super Bethesda based this year. Yeah. But I figured I'd go give everybody I always like to do a little recap outside of just the Elder Scrolls stuff because it's a fun time.
Yeah. I like general video game news. And if there's
cool
new games coming out or indie games that are worth picking up, you know, that kind of stuff.
Absolutely.
I love that stuff. Yeah, absolutely. All right. Awesome. Well, go check out Lotus's stuff. You can also check out my stuff. So if you're into Fallout with the Fallout TV show coming out, I do the Fallout Lorecast. You can check out I've been turning those episodes into like full video episodes with actual video content in them on YouTube. So there's a Fallout Lorecast YouTube channel. There's the podcast. If you're into Lord of the Rings, there's the Lord of the Rings Lorecast. Lots of different shows. My shows, other people's shows over at robotsradio.net. Go check out everything if you're looking for more content. And be part of our community. Come join us on the Discord. We love having chats in there. Everyone's posting stuff. And it's a wonderful community full of some of the nicest, kindest, coolest people. And people who are terrible or bots get banned like right away. Just boom. It's amazing because like a bot will show up and seriously, within minutes, somebody's like, admin, bot.
Yeah,
and then
it's a bot.
Me or one of the admins pops in and just like banhammers them and deletes everything and they're just gone. Like, and if anybody's causing trouble, they get put in quarantine. Like it's, if you're tired of the internet and you're tired of social media being so terrible, it's a wonderful, refreshing experience. So go check it out. All right. Thanks for being here, everybody. Thanks, Lotus. Thanks, chat.
Absolutely. Thanks,
and
everybody.
Until next time, I guess if you got to kick a bunch of elves' butts, then, you know, power up a big robot.
Yeah. Just grab yourself a giant robot.
There you go. All right. See you guys later.
Bye, everybody.
Thanks for tuning in to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. Check out robotsradio.net for more podcasts just like this. And join us on the Robots Radio Discord. Be part of a community of over 5,000 people who are excited about video games and so much more. Robots Radio. Games, lore, stories, community. Just press play.